Well, we've been looking forward to this as well. As I was praying through the names yesterday, and just a lot of you haven't seen for a while, but it's just been a real delight. And one thing that I was thinking about as I looked at the names and knowing most of you and the time that you are in your lives, you've certainly been reading a lot about how the time clock for us, for people, is just pushing back. And I was rereading a book, The Longevity Factor, and seeing how, as they trace time at the turn of this century, the past century, we saw the average age of adults was going out to about 46 to 48, and it has progressively gotten longer. The days have and the years have stretched out. And as I was thinking about that, I thought, what really has taken place? It isn't just that the last quarter of our lives has stretched out, and now, for instance, myself at age 55, projected to go to 95, and so it's the last quarter that seems to get longer, and that is not the case. What the case is the third quarter has gotten longer, and this has been really exciting. The age from 50 to 75 is now a very, very active and demanding opportunity. It's never been that way before. When a lot of us were growing up, our parents would look at 55 or 60, and that was basically it. They began looking for a place to retire, looking to settle themselves. And even, I remember navigators would talk about that, coming back and finding a place to settle. Well, those days aren't there anymore. We have an opportunity to invest tremendously throughout the 50s, 60s, and into the 70s. And these are active years. They're just not nice years. These are years that we want to take advantage of. And those things that we lose physically that we can't do anymore because our physical, our body cannot do as much as it could before, now those things are replaced with other things, wisdom that the Lord gives and provides in other ways. And I saw this. You'd be interested in this, being multipliers. It's the idea if you take one penny and every day double it, and then it shows the sequence here from one all the way down to 30, and it ends out in $5,000,003. Pretty impressive. But what is really interesting in this is take a look. 80% of it, when you get here, this is 80% of the days invested, of the days, only makes up for 1.6%. The great percentage, the great impact will in the last 20%. And that's really very true of our own lives. And so we couldn't be meeting on a subject more important than learning and coaching. That's the two subjects that have been given to us to handle. And we're really looking forward to this time. Now, at age 43, I'd been back 2 years from Europe, and I had the opportunity, along with Terry and others that were in the U.S. leadership team at the time, to go out. And for the first time, I met Bobby Clinton. And that was a divine encounter, as Bobby would, some of his terminology, would say. It was a true divine encounter for me, because it was catalytic. In the 40s, we tend to get to a place where we think we will move ahead with basically what we know. But I had just rebounded off just intensive leading, and I realized at stepping into a different position at national levels, I needed to learn more. And God had timed it so I could meet Bobby. I learned how to read in different ways, how to study, how to get into study projects, and tremendous things began to open up for me. How to put together what I was experiencing in leadership. And Bobby was catalytic all the way through his leadership emergence patterns, which later became the book or the popularized version of that, of The Making of a Leader. I developed a framework to understand how leaders develop, which has affected my life and my thinking and my ministry for these last 13 years. So it's a delight to be with Bobby on that, and many of you know we co-authored the book on mentoring, and that too was Bobby's way of helping me to develop, because, as he said, I knew you wouldn't have written that had I not done it together and pushed you, or had we not done it together. And it was a delight, and that's where we got to know each other even more. We've kept contact over these years. But as I thought about learning and how important it is, and for you to have the opportunity to be exposed to Bobby, and Bobby and I have been talking for the last couple days on what to bring to you, what practically to bring to you that would inspire you to and help you, give you practical ways to move ahead in learning. We've put together what we'll be presenting these next four sessions, and then the last two sessions will be on coaching. But Bobby is going to do the predominant amount of teaching, and we'll work on this the learning part, and what he has is just excellent. And we hope that you'll really be pushed way ahead in your thinking. Now, the only thing I would say to you is that there'll be a lot more information than you could possibly absorb. In some cases, it'll be like drinking from a fire hydrant, but it'll be new material to you. Some of it won't. Some will be new insights to other, and there'll be far more material than you can immediately apply. But take it in, because over the years, the more I've gotten, the more I've been able to apply as I went, as I've gone through the years. So I think we're in for a treat, especially to have Bobby here. So I'm going to turn it over to Bobby, my friend, my co-mentor, and real teacher.
Don, where was Don? You want to pass these out? On this table over here, I've got a catalog of my materials, and I use a lot of these materials in my mentoring stuff, so if some of you want to look over here and order them, you're welcome to do that. I brought 80 catalogs, so there should be one pretty much for everybody. And the rest of the materials, if any of you want to buy them, you can have them the last day. Just leave them up here so that people can look at them, and I'll be glad to sell those to you. I don't want to carry them back on the airplane, if possible. Ray, where's Ray? Lead us in a word of prayer and ask God to meet with us, would you? I had a mission assignment in Jamaica. I was the principal of the Jamaica Bible College in Mandeville. And so we learned to eat rice and peas, Jamaican rice and peas. It's good stuff. So about 8 years ago, I think it was, Ray and his wife invited my wife and me over to their home, and we had rice and peas. Still remembered. Thanks, Ray. Okay, I thought I'd introduce myself by showing my timeline. I'm not sure how well it'll show up or how big it is on the screen. Can you see it at all in the back? Can you follow along? It's three development phases that are shown from 1936 to 1970. Anybody born before 1936? Would you raise your hand? One. Okay. It's the case these days when I speak that hardly anybody ever raises their hand. You know, so in my earlier days, everybody was always older than me, but not anymore. 1936 to 1970 was the first phase, and I call it naive natural leader. Second phase was natural to spiritual leader, which goes up into 87, 89. There's a boundary. And then I moved into what I call my destiny leadership till now, 1994. I'll be 61 this coming March. So, well, I don't know where all the years have gone. But this period of time from 1964 to 1970 is when I met the Navigators. I was in Columbus, Ohio. There was a NAV contact team on Lockburn Air Force Base headed by Scott Sprague, who became a missionary in Tanzania. And we were in the Great Lakes region. And in the Great Lakes region at that time, Jack Mayhall was the head of it. And we had Bob Badana in Indiana. We had Walt Henriksen, I think, in Michigan State. Or was it Michigan? Yeah, he was in that area. And our big meetings were once-a-year conferences were held at Lake Wawasee. And Skip would come in there, fired up. And he was a little younger in those days. Really, he could really move you. Oh, Skip could. So he came in there. Leroy came in a couple times. Lauren came in a couple times. So I got to know the Navigators, and then we were working with a Navigator team at Lockburn Air Force Base. So that's where I went through my discipling, the basics. I learned the hand. I learned the wheel. I learned in those days they were even sharing what they called a Great Dipper, which is dealing with pace setting. Anybody remember that thing? Yeah. So those were the days. And this was when I first met the NAVs. And I have maintained contact with NAVs on and off over the years. And it's been a great privilege to do that. This is my basic timeline. And that'll get you a little background for me. Of me. And then here's my giftedness set. This is what's called a Venn diagram. The location and size of things indicates what's more prominent. And this is my actual giftedness set. Exhortations, my dominant spiritual gift, teaching second. Then I've got giving, word of wisdom, and faith about the same. And my natural ability is analytical skills, the ability to think in certain ways. And then my natural ability is leading. I've led ever since I can remember, even in the neighborhood baseball teams. But that's my Venn diagram of my giftedness set. Now, that's important because we're going to talk about mentoring and coaching. And basically, your mentoring mix is tied to your giftedness set and experience that you've learned along the way. Okay, this is my mentor mix, simplified. When I'm in a coaching environment where I'm coaching people, this is actually what happens. And I'll talk more about that when we talk about mentoring and coaching, which comes down line. That's who I am. Coach or teacher, contemporary model, sponsor. I don't just coach. You never do just one mentoring function. You do whatever you are as you mentor people. Okay, let's see. Give you two names. Give you two names. I want you to tell me what they have in common. Daniel, Paul. Daniel from the Old Testament, Paul from the New Testament. What do they have in common? If you think you got it, share it with your neighbor if you will. Share it with your neighbor if you think you got it. Okay, let's hear it up here. What are you saying? What do they have in common? Anything? Yeah.
They both have world-class academic training.
World-class academic training. That is really true. I never even thought of that before. That's great. Right on target. What else? Matt?
They both impacted a cross-culturally, an entirely different culture than we were raised
in. Excellent. What else? Yeah, I guess if you call the lion's den jail, he definitely was. No doubt about it. Okay, what else? You bet. It really did.
Pioneers.
High impact leaders. Right on target. I mean, all those things are really true. Purposes of what we're doing today, here's what they have. Daniel is the Old Testament prototype of a person who maintained a learning posture all his life. He's the Old Testament prototype. And in the New Testament, Paul is the New Testament prototype of a person who maintained a learning posture all his life. As you well know, you remember one of his last words in the books? Timothy, don't forget the books, especially the parchments. Don't forget those things. Bring them by if you will. Okay, have any of you ever heard of Samuel Bringle? Salvation Army. This is one of my favorite historical mentors who finished well. And the thing I love about this old man is that he had a tremendous learning posture all his life. He learned from people. He learned from events. He learned in every way you can think of. At age 37, he moved into a convergent role, which he maintained until age 76. This is a rare thing for a person to move into a convergent role that early and maintain it that long in his lifetime. What is a convergent role? That's your name? Nate? Hi, Nate. Convergent role means he moved into a focus that was who he was. It had a role that fit who he was in terms of giftedness, his experience, his destiny. And once he moved into that role, he was powerful all the rest of his lifetime. Okay, this is one of my favorite historical mentors who finished well and who maintained a learning posture. Now, what we're going to be doing in this particular These particular sessions are... Did you get that little handout that got passed around? If you take a look at that handout, what we're going to be doing is There's seven major lessons on page one. There's seven major lessons in our comparative study of leaders. We've identified these seven lessons. Effective leaders do whatever these things are. Now, we're concentrating on two of them. Can you see the two we're concentrating on in our sessions here? If you see them, put a check by them. What are the two we're dealing with? One I've just given you. Effective leaders maintain a learning posture all their lives. And then the one that says relational empowerment is important, both as a goal and a means. Okay, you got it? Mark both of those. Coaching falls under that relational empowerment. So those are the two that we're dealing with. In our study, since 1982, I've been working on studying cases of leaders and what happens to them, how they develop over a lifetime, what we can learn from that, how that can help us. And probably one of the most important facts that I've learned is this one. I just put it up here so you'll see it. Few leaders finish well. Biblically, if you take a look at the Bible concept, one out of three finish well. My guess is, in terms of contemporary leaders, it's a lot less. That's my guess. But few leaders finish well. So the warning then we want to know is, what can help us finish well? What can keep us from finishing well? We've identified six barriers to keep us from finishing well. Finances. Now, I'm not talking about raising your finances, although that might keep you from finishing well. We're talking about improper use of them, lack of integrity with regards to finances. Second is inordinate pride. There is a good pride in who we are and what we do and what God has done in us, but inordinate pride. Third one, abuse of power. Fourth one, illicit sex. Fifth one, family issues. And the sixth one, surprisingly, plateauing. So when we come to today's session, we're dealing with the major antidote to plateauing, and that's a learning posture. A learning posture is the major antidote that will keep us from plateauing. Now, in our lifetimes, we're going to plateau three or four times. So that will naturally happen. Some of it's good because it allows for consolidation, but we have to move off those plateaus. And your antidote for that is a learning posture. So, the major question I have for you is, do you have a learning posture? Do you have a learning posture? And I want to talk more about that, define it, and give some suggestions that you can use along the way.
Can you say more about family issues,
please? Can I say more about family issues? I could, but I don't think I'll do it because it doesn't really apply to our learning posture thing. I could say lots about it. But I'll tell you what, Nate, I'll talk to you personally. Is that okay? Okay. Learning posture, let's define it. Look on page two. What is a learning posture? My wife does not like this phrase, learning posture. She does not like that. She says, you've got to get another phrase for that. You could come up with something else. That's no good. It just does not communicate. So I want to ask, what is a good phrase we could use instead of learning posture? What would you come up with? Learning attitude.
Disposition.
Learning disposition.
Predisposition
to learn. Okay, that's it. I'll just tell my wife we've got some new terms along the way. Learning posture. What is it? It's a mental tendency to want to learn from any kind of source. Life's experiences. Someone has said that experience is the best teacher if you learn from it. But if you don't learn from it, it doesn't matter. Life's experiences. Other people. Formal training programs, non-formal or informal training, personal structured projects. You learn in all kinds of ways. We're going to test some of this learning posture because we've got a couple sessions where we break up in small groups. We're going to find out, are you willing to learn from other people, particularly people that are perhaps your peers or less than your peers? Do you have a learning posture? So we'll talk about we'll see how what kind of learning posture you have when we break up in small groups. Actually, it's large groups. Groups of seven or eight. No, small groups for me are four or five. So we'll be using those. Okay. Did I give the five things that enhance a good finish? In our studies, we're over 1,000 cases now. Not only have we identified those things for people, the barriers to finishing well, we've also identified people who finish well. What were some of the things that enhance that good finish? And here they are. One of them is perspective. They have ability to see the bigger picture always. They always see today in terms of the bigger picture, lifelong picture. Second thing is they have repeated renewal experiences. They recognize that throughout their lifetime they're going to need God to come and renew them more than once in a major way. So they have repeated renewal experiences. They have all kinds of disciplines, and I'm not speaking just of spiritual disciplines, but all kinds of disciplines that they maintain in their life. And then numbers 4 and 5, learning posture. They're constantly learning all of their lives. And the last one, mentoring. And that's the two that we're actually dealing with in this session, or in these sessions. And when you come to look at training, if you take a look at a lifetime, a person lives 85, 75 years, how are they actually trained? Well, there are three kinds of ways of getting at training. One's called formal, one's called non-formal, one's called informal. Now, when you think over a lifetime, formal training probably for most people, we're talking beyond high school, formal training is probably limited to 7 or 8 years at most for most people. So over a lifetime, that's not very long. And then non-formal, if you took all the workshops, all the seminars, all the conferences you went to over a lifetime, put them together, you may get 3 years worth, maybe. So you got about 10 years of formal or non-formal over a lifetime, say a ministry lifetime of 45 years, which means you got 35 years that you better be learning via informal means, because that's where most of life is lived. So you have to learn how to do that, and we're going to talk about that particular part. But I just want to say a word on observation of navigators that I've known over the years and the navigators in general, and that is, in the informal reign, they've been very good in deliberate on-the-job training at lower levels. You know, hitting a campus or a base or a business world. They've been very good in training people in how to disciple, how to do direct ministry. But as leaders move in higher levels, the training has not been that well. So they're very good in some kinds of informal training. That's why I just love this program. Because this is saying, hey, let's look at other levels of leadership and what can we do to develop them. So I love it, Alan. Okay, informal modes. In general, navigators that I know have not taken much advantage of formal training. The ones that I've known that have taken advantage of it, for the most part, have used it as a transition out of the navigators. They were leaving the navigators, so this is a way to next step up and figure out what they're doing. That may not be true of all, but the formal mode, and I understand in these years we're getting more and more people that are being involved in some sort of formal training. And I want to just say a word about that because I want to push my own courses at Fuller. I've got a course coming up December 9th through 13th. That's 5 days. It's a Change Dynamics course. It's the very course that Matt and 17 others came to about 10 years ago. And it's only 5 days. It's intensive as all get out, and you need to do a little reading before you get there. But this is a formal training program that can change your life forever in terms of how you relate to people, how you bring about change. So I want to say a word about that. Second, I've got a class coming off in February. It's, I think it's the 19th, whatever Monday is along there. It's a 2-week class. It's 4 hours a day. It's an intensive class. And it's dealing with New Testament leadership values. Basically, it's dealing with how do you study the Bible for leadership information. And 2 weeks, people can do that. And next summer, I think it's the middle 2 weeks of June, I have a two-week intensive, 4 hours a day for 2 weeks, that's dealing with focused lives. Focused lives is my technical term for Paul. Where are you, Paul? For Paul's second half stuff. Have you heard anything about Paul's second half stuff? This is my term for the second half. How do we deal with focused lives? How do we move toward what we want to accomplish over the last 25 or 30 years of our life? So that comes off in the summertime, and I would just love to have some navigators in there. I would love to have some navigator women in there. I really would. And I see there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, is that right, in here? Marilyn said, this Marilyn's my wife, Marilyn says, I bet you they won't have one woman. I bet they won't have one woman. And I said, no, they'll have one. But here you are. I just love to see you in here. I'd love to have you in my classes. I've got a paper over here for you, Gender and Leadership. It might be of some help to you. NAVs are very good in deliberate on-the-job training. They're very good in mentoring, particularly disciple mentoring, and sometime in counseling, and a few other than mentoring. So they're good in that. And then the other third major way that people grow in informal is what we call growth projects, and that's what we're going to talk about a little today. Okay, if you'll take a look at that page that's got growth projects, have you got that one? What is a growth project? Malcolm Knowles, if you've read The Modern Practice of Adult Education, the guru who studied how adults learn and why they learn and what they do best, if you study him, what he says is over a lifetime, adults set little growth projects for them. Now, a lot of it's informal, but they set little growth projects, and they begin to work on those things. And over a lifetime, a steady diet of growth projects, they will grow and develop. So if you take a look at that definition, a growth project is an attempt by an adult learner to say, I want to learn something. And here's a way I can do it, and I'm going to do it. So it's a short period, specific. Growth projects can be self-initiated, or somebody else can say, hey, have you thought about this? Maybe you need to do this. Of your self-initiated, here are the basic things you can do. Structured experiences. Structured experiences. For example, I was with World Team, mission organization, for 11 years, and my job after I came off the field was to run a learning resource center, which was in charge of orienting missionaries and training them for the field. And so we were interested in language learning. So I took the Brewster's course. Tom and Betty Sue Brewster were teaching LAMP, which is a language acquisition made practical. It's a what they call a barefoot method. You go out with people and you learn and you speak and you learn and you speak and you learn and you speak. So since I was the training coordinator, I set a growth project. I want to go through this thing to see if it's any good for our people. So I went through the thing, tried it myself, and then I went to Haiti and spent 4 months living in Haitian homes trying to learn Haitian Creole in order to find out if this stuff could be used in our mission. That's a growth project. Structured experience. And I came to the conclusion, would you like to know what the conclusion is about using that kind of language method? The conclusion, people who learn languages very well, that's a good method for them. Good method for them. People who do not learn languages very well, it's not a good method for them. You know, as a matter of fact, people who learn language well, it doesn't matter what the method is. They're going to learn it, and they'll learn it, doesn't matter what it is. And people who do not learn language well, it doesn't matter what you send them through. They're not going to learn it. You know, it's the middle ones that count. The ones that are maybe learn it, maybe not. For those people, this method was outstanding because they learned culture and language together. They practiced all the time. It was a good method. Okay. Structured experiences. Study-oriented. Some can be study projects. Some can be study in conjunction with formal and informal things. It can be observation-oriented. One of the best ways to learn is just to get in a situation sometimes and just to observe for a period of time, reflect on it, understand what's happening, try to analyze it, see what's happening. So observation is a good one. And then there's many other kinds that I couldn't think of a title for, so I just called it other over there. So you've got growth projects, self-initiated, other-initiated. Read the key elements of it so I don't have to read it to you. Just read down through that and look up here when you're finished. Growth projects. One of the things I love about Paul Stanley is he can tell a lot of stories. He's really a good storyteller. So I said, hey, Paul, I'll tell him what these things are theoretically, and then you come give the stories about them. So he's going to come. Paul, come. And he's going to tell us about growth projects in terms of his own life. And I've asked him to do two or three. If he's real long, we'll make it two. And if he's shorter, then I'll make him do all three of them. Paul, come and tell us about growth projects and what the difference they make in your life.
Okay, just a couple of recent projects over the last couple of years that, and Bobby got me onto this several years ago, to capsulize what is it that I want to learn and go after it. And one was I'll give you one in my spiritual life. And this was in the area of contemplative prayer. I began to read about it and hear a few persons mention it. And those that knew more about it were those of the Catholic faith. And so I looked into some of their literature and became intrigued with it, found out enough about it that I realized that I would gain tremendously from it. It's the integration of the Word and the Spirit in terms of meditating on the Word and growing in that area. I wanted to grow deeper, and so I had tried to take some of the prayers, the written-out prayers that saints of the past had done, and I began to meditate on those, but I felt like it had gotten to a point where I needed to take some time and learn from it. Found out that Saint Benedict was probably the father of it. He didn't author it, but he moved it ahead in the monastic movement when he rewrote the rules, and it's called the Rule, that reestablished the monastic movement. And it was a tremendous influence on it. But part of the Benedictine order is a three times a day having contemplative prayer. So we looked around to see if we could find a Benedictine monastery here in Colorado. And it turns out there's two of them. And one is near Aspen, and the other is another place, and which was only about 30 minutes from here. And I knew that I need to get away far. And so didn't ski or anything, and this place does not have skiing. lift tickets do not come with coming into the Benedictine monastery. So I defined basically the project was this: understand contemplative prayer and how one can grow in its practice. I discussed it with some people who seemed to know. Asked around, as I said before, I was able to find some people who understood spiritual direction, which is a fading art in the Protestant side, but a very alive area still in the Protestant and the Catholic area. Met some of those, and they had fantastic things to say. So they encouraged me, and so off I went, and I booked myself into 5 days in a Benedictine monastery, which is basically it's male. There's 18 monks there, but the facility they've created for you to stay in is both male and female, and it's an excellent facility. It was just recently put together. And so I got there, and the monk that I met, Arnold, he was been there for quite a few years and found out it was a working monastery, and they worked. But they get up three times a day. One is at in 4 o'clock and had a time of contemplation. And so they invited me to join them, and I did, before they went off to work. And then they stopped in the middle of the day, had another hour, and then again in the end of the day. But what really enabled me, I think, was the whole idea of reading, first of all, St. Benedictine's writings on the Rule. And then I began to, by guided by this one monk, he gave me 4 more books written by some of the monastic fathers. And about the second or third day, I began to understand what more and more it was. It didn't seem to be that difficult to understand it, but the problem, of course, was applying it and working on it. So I took the next 3 days to really spend extended times in doing the disciplines that they have they outline that need to be done. They're fairly simple disciplines that simply meditating on the Word, asking several different questions, and then spending time in prayer in response to it. And those disciplines we know fairly well, but several of them began to give me good ideas of how to apply it. In the reading, or as I came out of that, it has, I would say, dramatically influenced my life. It has dramatically influenced how I pray. It has helped me tune in one fellow who takes care of the farm up there and knows, learned how to shear sheep and all. He tells me how he prays even during the day and how he'll lock in on one verse, one thought from the scriptures and keep repeating it, and he'll repeat it close to 100 times during the day so it stays with him. So I started to do that. We're not accustomed in the Protestant faith to do that, but I began to repeat certain phrases that I would take out of the Word for my quiet time. And it has been very effective in my life. One nugget that I went away with, and I'll just share with you, is that this phrase from one of the monastic fathers wrote this: any trial, setback, or hurt can be conquered by silent meditation on Christ and His Word. Now, every navigator would love to say that, but that's really true. Any trial, any setback. And so what one would do is when one has a trial, one has a setback, or there's a hurt to be conquered, the first thing one needs to do is go back and have silent meditation on Christ, first of all, and then from His Word. And I have used that in a number of situations I've been. This allows the Holy Spirit to teach, comfort, remind, and give perspective, discernment, and strength. That is why Jesus often withdrew to be silent, alone, and with the Father. And then one aspect of that, Ben, is I happened to read in one of the writings of the monastic father was talking about Father St. Cassian. St. Cassian lived back in the 400 A.D., and he was talking to many of his disciples, and they asked him, what is the greatest virtue, the greatest of all virtues? And so the recording went back and forth on how these students were discussing it, work, love, all these different things. And finally, when they finished, they turned to him and say, Father Cassian, what do you think is the greatest? And this was his answer. Discernment is the primary virtue. Often good intentions and acts go astray because of poor discernment, not seeing the beginning from the end, the good from the bad, the best from the good, the right from the wrong, the consequences in relationship to the choice, God's priorities and desires in comparison to His own. Went on to say that discernment is a kind of eye and lantern to the soul. Matthew 6:22-23 says, the light of the body is the eye. Keep your eye pure and your whole body will be full of light. The power of discernment scrutinizes all the thoughts and actions of a man, distinguishes and sets aside everything that is base and not pleasing to God, and keeps us free from delusion. And then gave the illustration of Saul in 1 Samuel 13, who did not perceive that it was more pleasing to God that he should obey Samuel's command than that he should offer sacrifice. And then this comment was interesting. He gave offense through the very thing that with which he thought to serve God. And so I have begun to try to grow in discernment. And as I talked to one of the monks, said, the key to discernment is contemplative prayer. Contemplating over the various truths and then bringing them back to God in prayer. So this was one project that has profoundly influenced my life. And again, as Bobby says, putting it together, defining it, and then get a plan of action, get more information on it. And one thing I did find is that as I set this project up, God began to just bring people and resources into my life to help me in this project that I never anticipated. And that has happened now in quite a few of my projects as they've gone on. Should I do another? Okay. Number two. This was more in the ministry area, but it was primarily I've been intrigued by the whole idea of what it means to lead like Christ. So Bobby says, make a project. Get after it. So I've been talking about it for a while. Why don't you get onto it? So I did. I started to discuss it with people. I picked out about four or five people who I respect in leadership, people like Howie Hendricks and Leighton Ford and the rest, and began to just talk to them about what impresses them about leading like Jesus, what are the resources they found that help you know more about leading like Jesus. And I got some good book references, good thoughts, began to accumulate these in a stack of information that I was putting together that I would then go over and define my project, which was basically to understand this, how to lead like Christ. Two books came my way that I had absolutely nothing to do with. One was a book called Mentoring for Missions by a YWAM person. He had written a PhD dissertation, and this book was his dissertation. And normally those don't sell very well. And it's a compilation of all the studies and the essence of everything he learned. It's a fantastic book. And it's almost worth the book, just the bibliography in the back, to get all the information. And this was just a godsend. It gave me all kinds of insights, as well as some other books to look at. And then there was another one that a friend happened to have. Someone sent it to him, and again, it was a dissertation, PhD dissertation, which nobody else bought, and so the author just sent it around to a lot of people. And he had one, and he hadn't even looked at it, and he says, "Here, take it." And it was all about the relationships that Jesus had with his disciples, and in detail defining each one. These two books became very important to my project. So I set off. I set 10 days aside in the summer and went out to Maine, as far away as I could get, to where was a little cottage of a friend of a friend's, and it was by the side of a lake. Pretty quite primitive, but exactly what I needed. And went there for 10 days. Phyllis joined me in the last day, and then we were able to drive around a little bit as well. But during this time, I read through the Gospels three times, and one time in each sitting with different translations, and then began to make a timeline of Jesus Christ's life, including leadership events, relationships, observations, and habits of Christ, and also where he interacted with those he was leading. Once having made that, I began to study the relationships that Jesus had with them, and finally the different strengths and areas that I was observing. Now, what I've learned, first of all, that it's an almost unsearchable resource to try to get into the life of Christ. You keep discovering more and more, and I wondered, will I ever get there that I could put something together? But then I decided to apply my contemplative prayer. And I began to spend hours of contemplating and stop reading, stop writing, got away from my computer, and just began to contemplate. And I did that for almost 2 days. And at the time of when I finished that, I was able to put together the center core of Jesus' leadership. And it has profoundly influenced my life. I had not seen it anywhere. Nobody had written about it. But it was a tremendous impact on my life. And secondly, I was able to develop a model for leadership, a model of Jesus, what I feel is for developing leaders. And it's all from Jesus. And it's so exciting. I just spent 4 days going over some of this information with some of the leaders, young leaders of the NAVS, 45 of them in Ethiopia. And it was just a delight to be able to speak from all of that and to share with it, because it's something God's given to me, just like you've all had that experience. And so it's been very rich for me. Just to tell you the one thing, the center core of Jesus' character, I've shared this with some, in his whole inner life and this whole leadership, was just the revelation and understanding is how deep and unconditional and unlimited his Father's love was for him. I've never read this in a book, any place, that's a start for leadership. But it affected his identity and security. And the only way you can lead in a life that Jesus did, and then some of these days, is to have a tremendous sense of security. Secure and deep identity in God and God alone. It freed him to be a giver. He didn't have to be a taker in his relationships, because God was filling his cup up and allowed him then to just be totally a giver and not think about receiving at all. And finally, it was his prime motivation and created a passion to please God. That was the passion of his life, is to please God and one day say, "I did it all for you. Everything I did, I completed and did it for you." all because of his tremendous understanding how deep God's love was for him. So it underscored it, and it also underscored this whole idea that I've learned, again, as Bobby and I spent time together, we minister out of our beingness. And that's all of Christ came from that very thing, the depth of his life and his relationship with his Father. So those are two of the projects that profoundly affected me. And
we're going to go for one more. Tell us about coming out of Germany into the
Eastern Division, that whole setup, and coming up to speed on leadership. Tell us that one, if you will.
Okay. This is when I had just gotten to know Bobby out in, as we attended the course. When I got back in 1984, I was asked, I realized that the new responsibilities that I was facing, and I, like many of you, had just been leading and leading and leading and not stopping and reflecting and trying to understand what I was doing. I knew more about my leadership by looking back at what I did rather than looking ahead, because I'm an intuitive person, and so I needed to get a framework, put something together and understand leadership. I also want to understand different levels of leadership. At the same time, Lauren Sani had asked me just before I left Europe, and then it spilled over into my U.S. assignment, to take an inventory of what does our leadership look like at the middle and upper level levels around the world. And so I, how are we doing on our leader development? That was his question. Give us an inventory. So I realized in order to do that, I need to understand leadership more. So not knowing exactly what to do, I called up Howie Hendricks, and I asked him, Howie, I've just been given this assignment, but also I need to get up to speed on leadership. Can you help me? We talked a bit on it, and then he said, sure, I can do that. And he said, why don't you come down and spend a whole day with me in Dallas, and we'll work it out. So we did. I flew down to Dallas and spent a whole day. Later on, however, I found out that that whole day that I just thought he just set aside a day, those who go to seminary for 4 years down there would give their right arm to have, and very few ever get. So I didn't realize, and this was not only the first, but it was going to be, others were going to come. So we spent the whole day talking about two things. What do I need to know, and who do I need to read? Who do I need to get in touch with? Who are the thought influencers? Who is writing out there that's worth reading? And so I got a list and went back with my list. And then he said, well, basically, when you finish that, come back and we'll talk more. So it took me 4 months to get into all that. And I read through it and worked on these authors, called up people, talked with a number of them. It was nice to be able to call somebody and say, Howie Hendricks has referred me to you on this project. And as I find out nowadays, it's really a wonderful thing to have a reference from a respected person. And so they did talk to me, and they did answer questions, and we interacted, and they did send me things. And so after 4 months, I consolidated a lot of what I had learned, and I'd learned a great deal, and had gone into the scriptures to compare it as well. And then I went down and saw Howie again for another day, and we spent the day together talking about this. It was a fantastic conversation. And back and forth, and then I went back with a couple more assignments to finish up the last 2 months. And so by the 6th month, I had finished that time. I was brought up to date and had insights and knew who was saying what, and it brought me into the leadership picture in the U.S., and particularly some of the things that I found out my own self, what I needed to know. Well, basically this is that most of our middle and upper level leaders have not been developed, but just have developed themselves through a lot of what you're saying here. Survivors make good leaders. And those that had help or development had got it somewhere. They went after it. Found out also that we did a very good job of training staff to lead ministries. But as soon as we stepped into the kind of crux move was when a staff person moved from leading ministry to leading other leaders, other staff. And that was the most important move, and we were doing nothing to help that transition. I was comforted by the fact by comparing notes with Campus Crusade, InterVarsity, and all the rest, and they didn't do anything either. So, matter of fact, all of them said, "Boy, when you find out something to do, would you please let me know?" So, anyhow. Did I? Yeah, I did, matter of fact, and developed a good relationship with a fellow who eventually left Campus Crusade because he couldn't implement anything that we were talking about. So, that's it? Oh, that's yours.
Yeah, don't run off with my notes, sir.
Okay.
Okay, now we're not talking about anything you don't already know about. We're just giving it names. You know, call it growth projects. You give it a name, you can do something with it. And we've defined some of the steps. Now, what I want you to do for the next few minutes, share with your neighbor some growth project you've done in the past 5 years. Don't care what it is. But think of it in terms of your growth project. Think in terms of what you did, how you did it, and what were the results of it. Okay? One-on-one or one-on-two if you... Everybody had a chance to share? I like to give learning experiences like a growth project a title. So, for example, you know, Paul's cabin experience, or actually a little cottage, or his monastery experience. You know, I give it a name. Now, what I'd like for you to do is, would you give a name to the growth project that the other person shared with you? Talk it over with them. Give a name to that, and then in a minute I want to hear some of these names. And I want to hear some of the growth projects. So do that if you will. Somebody have a good one back here anywhere? Matt?
Don studied William Penn, and the title is William Penn's Holy Experiment.
William Penn's Holy Experiment. Tell us what you heard.
He studied the life of William Penn, who set out to establish a community that was dedicated to living out biblical truths in a context of being Quakers, as opposed to up in Boston in the context of being Puritans. And so he just studied William Penn's life and efforts to try and give leadership to this experiment, and drew conclusions about leadership from the study.
What was his own basic application that he got out of that?
That absentee leadership doesn't work very well.
Okay.
Because William Penn had it going well and then left to go back to England for 15 years, and when he came back, all his efforts were undone.
Sound familiar? Others back there that you heard anywhere? Let's get somebody in the back here. Some learning project. Boy, tell us something. What did he learn?
He did learn that skill is a skill that can be developed, that you can train in that area, and that I think some of the examples that Ron gave showed that people actually sought him out more as a result of developing the skill.
Wow. Of course, that skill... conflict resolution is not needed in the NAVs.
No.
But if we could just send you over to Campus Crusade, if we could just get you over there. Oh, that's a great one. That's a tremendous thing that has to be learned at all levels of leadership. Wonderful. Others? If you don't volunteer, I know about 20 of you. I'm going to call you by name if you don't volunteer. Come on, Fred, share something with us. Isn't that Fred? No. Sorry, Fred.
I was taking out the computer role and the leadership emerging patterns course. I just split that.
Amen. Did you get much out of Arch's course?
I did. Still in the midst of
working through the project. Yeah. Okay. Others?
And she said it affected her own life. We learned something, and the way she turned out was to go. Particularly listening to the intuitive ear, not just the tongue.
Mm-hmm. We had a case down here. I've forgotten your name already.
Eddie.
Had a case here where the learning project was picking up Spanish, but the thing I liked about it was the trading mentoring, where you mentored one way and the other person. Share us a little bit about that. Share with us, if you will.
Sure. When the Lord blessed and several leaders here were involved in decisions for me to go back to go to seminary at Trinity in the Chicago area, I had always since youth wanted to be able to speak Spanish, but never did anything about it. So when I went to seminary, I asked the Lord to provide me an opportunity to do that. So I ended up finding a roommate who was a young guy starting to plant a church among the Spanish in the Chicago area. So I said, I'll make you a deal. You tutored me in Spanish, I'll tutor you in church planning. And so it worked out to be a great experience. I was a church project. So all the little kids would come up and speak to me. I'd say, Mama, come on, you know, and they would just talk to me and talk. And so over about 4 years, even though it was kind of dense, you know, things started falling into place. Mm-hmm. And so over the 4 years I was doing my academic training at Trinity in New Testament, the Lord blessed me to get up to speed where I could preach and teach in Spanish. And relate to people, so that was just wonderful. And the church got planted.
And then he said, "You're right."
That's right.
Now, did you do the same thing with a Russian?
Yes.
Any other growth projects you'd like to share with us, Roger? No growth projects and how to raise money or anything. Good. Paul, come on up here if you will. Where'd Paul go? I want to just say a couple of growth projects that I work on, and then Paul and I just do some question and answers, kind of anything you want to bring up to us we'll do for the remaining time. I've got most of the people that I've dealt with at seminary have been boomers, so there's a fairly close relationship between me and them and a lot of values. And matter of fact, I've taken on many more of their values so that I relate to them pretty well. But busters are a whole different thing. You know, and now busters are starting to come in the seminaries. So I've got one buster friend, and I've done the same thing. I've traded. You know, I said, okay, I will mentor you. And he wanted to learn about union life, identity with Christ, victory in the life. So I said, I'll tutor you in that if you'll help me with my computer stuff. Because us old guys have got to get up to speed on computers. You know, if we're going to. So he's really helped me over the last 2 years. Until, you know, he's got me an email. He's got me on all kinds of things. He brings in new packages and shows me how to do it and that sort of thing. And that has been very helpful for me. I hope I've helped him as well, you know, in some of the union life things that I've learned about. But that's been a growing project. Second thing is when Paul and I, one of the things that we first did together with he and Phyllis was Paul wanted to learn leadership emergence theory. Same course you took, Fred, but he couldn't get 2 weeks off to come over here to do it. So he asked me one time, could you just come over here with us? And I said I could take 3 days and come over and meet with he and Phyllis. And I would be glad to do that if they do some work ahead of time. And then we could spend 3 days together. And on the promise that he would tell me what he had been learning about mentoring. Because he had been doing some work in mentoring. And my mentoring basically was discipleship. Because that's all I knew how to do fairly well. So we agreed on that. And we went and spent, I think it was almost 4 days. We spent together, and what I learned in that was the whole concept of the constellation model. Have any of you read the connecting book? The constellation model, you need upward mentoring, you need downward mentoring, you need lateral, external, and internal mentoring. That constellation model. Now, I was dominantly doing downward mentoring to people, and I didn't, the whole concept that I needed mentoring and that peer mentoring was a good thing was new to me. So one of the first things I did as a growth project was to experience the constellation model. I went out and got lateral mentors, and I got upward mentors, and I tried it just to see what it would do in my own life. And that was a wonderful, and I've maintained that same constellation. Now, you can't do them all at once, all at the time, and right now I'm needing another upward mentor. But it's been a really growth experience for me. And in my downward mentoring, one of the things I've learned as I mentor people individually is that when I can find a group of people who have the same kind of mentoring need, I can put them in a mentoring group. And so I work with them in mentoring groups. And that's been a real experience for me to learn how to mentor a whole group. And we'll talk more about that when we talk about coaching. One of my favorite little growth projects was one in 1968. I'm the only person in my family that's non-musical. My sisters all sing and play the piano and organ. And so I set out a little growth project to play a little recorder. Do you know these little wooden kind of things that look like this? They're called recorders. So I set out, I wanted to spend time in my devotional, in my quiet time, learning just to worship through playing my recorder and playing hymns. So I set out a growth project to do that, and I took one simple hymn to learn how to play. Now, I could read notes in the sense I knew when they went up and down and which ones to do the fingers. I had to learn which fingers went with what. It took me 6 weeks to get through that one hymn without making a single mistake. But I finally learned how to do that. And now I can play that recorder in my quiet time. I can have the worship. I can turn to hymns. And I can only play ones that have two sharps and below or two flats and below. If they're more than that, I can't do it. So I have problems when they're more because the fingers are all different in a different way. So I had problems with that. So I set a growth project with Stuart Darrowman, Jews for Jesus musician, now working on his PhD, to help me learn how to transpose things that were three and four sharps down to two flats and below. So I got a growth project. Now I can take any of my favorite hymns that are big and go ahead and make them things that I can play. So that's another growth project that I've had. I enjoyed that. Okay, questions you might have, comments?
Bobby, I have one for you.
Okay.
So you've been teaching a lot of people, exposed to a lot of midlife career people coming into seminary, and watching it even before you got there, you're working with people. What do you see in a person that tells you they've got a learning attitude?
Well, that's a dirty question. I prompted him and gave him that question this morning in his office so he'd be ready to answer it, you know? And then the guy turns around and gives me the question.
So,
what do I look for? In the people that I'm good offensive, better than defense, okay? But, things I look for. I deal with mid-career people, mostly, and they're people that are coming, some of them are coming on sabbaticals, and they're reevaluating where they are in life, where they're going to go, and that sort of thing. And one of the things that I have found that's important is need. People who are needy are people who are open to learning. So I'm always looking for people who are in crisis, boundaries in their lives, and have great needs. And those people generally will have a learning posture. And the people that come into my classes, they bring agendas into those classes. You know, they've been on the field. They have questions and problems, and they want to bring them. So I'm looking for people that want answers to situations they're dealing with. Those people will have a good learning posture. Hmm. Now I'll ask you that question. What do you see? What shows you, what symptoms show you people have learning posture?
Well, I've seen people that do not have a learning posture tend to be indecisive, tend to talk more about the present and the past, not about the future. Their glow is gone about the future. There's not an anticipation of some new things in their life. They've really plateaued. You know, that's. But one thing I was mentioning to you that we got talking about quite a bit is. I'm learning more and more that if you want to know about a person, speak more to their peers than to those who are above them and below them. And they can give you a lot of insights, and they'll also give you... I've noticed that peers are attracted to someone who's learning, but also younger people are attracted to older people who are learning.
So one of the symptoms in an older person who's attracting young people probably
yes.
has a good learning posture.
Right. I've never been around a person... younger people were wanting to be around that person over a long period of time, that hasn't been a real learner. So regardless of what the age, they might have some old experience to give, but they'll give that pretty quickly. But if the person is learning and there's new thoughts, learning in Christ, learning about life, there's something good about being around a person that's learning.
Any questions you might have, comments?
Yes, Rusty.
Bobby, you made a couple of comments before about, you know, navigators are like this, navigators are like that. Just from your observation of where the world is headed, and also based on your understanding of the navigator's mission, what would you say to middle-aged leaders like us? What could be some areas of growth projects that would be particularly important? And maybe one we wouldn't realize that would be that important. In order to continue to develop in the ways that we have to make our best contribution.
I would suggest this is the halftime thing. You know, we're dealing with that phenomenon. I would suggest that if you're in, you know, mid-40s or late 40s, early 50s, if you're in that age, I think a thing that you ought to do is take a sabbatical, whatever it may be, 3 months, 6 months if you can get it. Take a sabbatical and do some studies in terms of what I call focused life thinking and try to understand where you are in the whole process of a long term and then make some decisions that will make that second half really count. Now, Paul, you may have some stuff on that. Do you have some comments on that?
Yeah, I would just say also that by this time, mid-40s or so, you know yourself. And the most important thing you can possibly do is to really understand who you are and how God tends to use you and what he does through you and know those strengths that he tends to use. And those things will be the base of your future contribution in the second half of life. And so that's the area I would begin with, looking in those areas as to what strengths do I have that need to be made stronger, need to be developed, and what skills can I bring into those areas which will allow me to be more effective. So for me, for instance, and when I realized that I was going to be more and more involved in communicating some of the things I was learning, I have really started to work a lot more on that because I do not have any gift in the area of teaching. So I had to start getting into other people who were teachers, good teachers, getting them to evaluate my stuff, getting them around other people, talking to other people who are good teachers. How do they present what they do? I started to get around Stephen Covey as much as I could because I liked a lot of what he was sharing, but I wanted to see how he shared it. And I even went to a couple of his seminars just to see what he did and began to learn from that I could do those things. So I had some deficit areas that if I was going to be communicating more and more in, publicly, I needed to strengthen that area, particularly in the kinds of things I wanted to communicate. So there are other skills in other areas. So I would just say that that's the big area. And then those areas which perhaps are going to be important for us all to know in the future. You mentioned one about computers. I've talked to several people about that, and there's just no way we can be relevant as leaders to not understand the capacities that computer brings into leadership. You don't have to be an expert in personally in handling it and using it, but if you don't understand the capacities and begin to incorporate that into your thinking, kind of high-tech moving thinking, it's you'll be behind. And I've been told that by a number of people. So I'm in the process and have been as well. And those are things that, you know, they push you ahead. If I'm going to be successful in that area, if I'm going to really push out, then I'll need that. So.
Mm-hmm. What about the relationship between one's own learning style and a choice of a project? For example, Paul was talking about certain projects, there seems to be a flavor related to Paul's own style of learning.
Good observation.
Yeah, and that's really true. And I think in the back of your book, Dave, Dave Hawes. Where did you put it? What section? Oh, Dave's gone. Anyhow, it's in there. He'll probably... it's in one of the sections. It's actually... Dave has taken a lot of what Bill Mowry has put together and shortened it, made it a quick little test. It takes about a half hour. I took it myself.
It's Appendix 1
under Tab 6. Under Tab 6, Appendix 1. It's just one of those quick ones that you go through. Most people I find already know the way they learn. Some people learn experientially and interacting, need to try it. Some are more audio learners, and some are more visual learners. Some learn by through books and get off alone in isolation. Others learn very interactively. And you should know that already. And if you do, then take advantage of that. That's the only thing I would say. Design it around who you are. Don't try to go to, take on a seminary series of courses if that's not the best way you learn it. But also, what I would say is there are some areas that you can, one of the growth projects is to increase your capacity to learn by pushing yourself into other areas and styles of learning. Try it. So I personally had not, you're going to get into that, the whole idea of reading. I was not a strong reader. I only read what I needed to do that, passing a course, an engineer type, read it, 100% retention. So I read very slowly. And so when I was about 28, I realized I am going to fall behind if I do not learn to read.
We're not talking about reading faster, but how to read.
How to read. And, well, it was two. One is how to learn faster. I went through three courses that didn't even help me. And it was just so discouraging for me. I just could not get through a book. I looked at a book. I was about 30 years old, and I looked at a book that was too thick, and I just longed to get into that, and I knew if I started, it would just take me so long, and I just didn't think I could ever, ever really read and enjoy a book. My wife, English major, just, you know, was one of those discouraging people. She'll just, you know, take a big book, and in 3 days say, boy, that was great, you know, and my kids and all the rest. And I could go on and on how the Lord changed that around. But it was through sheer perseverance and working through and then getting a buddy, reading buddies. And I remember the first year I read 10 books in that year. I mean, I just was absolutely, I was...
Stressed beyond stretching.
Stretched. I was elated. I just only wept with joy. I realized it was whole worlds were open to me. And that had just been the beginning. And I've told that story so many times that if I can do it, anybody can learn to read and read well and read a lot. And I do. And it's just my whole world has been opened up. And it was all because I'm an auditory learner. I interact. I do all these things. And I always thought, well, that side is not available to me just because of a deficiency, a limitation, a mental block. I don't know what it was. And anyhow... by sheer encouragement and perseverance, I threw. And then I met Bobby, and Bobby has taught me different ways to learn, which he's going to go through that will help us a great deal.
There's a couple of hands over here. We'll get this and then come back to Nate.
Bobby, how strong is your relationship between one's learning style and one's style?
I don't know that I can answer that question directly, but I've observed that people that don't have a good learning posture, they're very inflexible in their leadership style as well. So there's a carryover in that direction. I don't know about the learning going in the other direction, but I've noted that for sure. You got any answers on that thing?
Well, I, like you, Daryl and I were talking a little bit about that, and I feel that that's worth exploring because my intuition would say that there is a connection between those two. And like you said, if a person is not willing to learn, would tend to be very narrow and rigid in their ways of learning, or ways of leading. And that would certainly be one conclusion. But
that's a good question.
Yeah.
I just had a comment on that.
Yeah.
It occurs to me that two situations for that really kick in if we do have an ask. One is, if someone's been asked to get into a leadership role where we really don't know what the future looks like that we're going to, then how you learn is real critical. If you're the kind of person that kind of has to learn from what's already been done, it'd be tough to get a lead like that. And the second thing would be is if you're in a leadership but where it's really dynamic. It's something different all the time. There's different people. Someone that can learn on the run and apply it quicker would probably survive
in that environment.
So,
yeah. Or eclectic learning. They can learn just pulling in from all the ways. But certainly, yeah.
I had a question, too. It does seem like most navigators feel overloaded all the time. For us and those kind of people, how would you suggest we look at our ministry role, our responsibility, and process that in order to carve out time and energy to do the kind of thing you're talking about?
I think it requires a paradigm shift in thinking, and it has to do with the P plus PC balance that Covey uses. Do you know that balance, P plus P, productivity? Navs are highly productive oriented. Plus, you know, it's P plus PC. PC is production capability. And I think it takes a paradigm shift to recognize that production capability is just as important as production. And if you don't take care of the horse, then the horse is going to die and you're going to be out of there along the way. So I think it's a paradigm shift. It's a matter of PC is just as important as P. And if I don't take care of that, that balance is going to go out of whack and I'll have trouble later on. I don't think that's an either or. I in my opinion, you got a good answer on that, and I'll think about it while you're answering.
Oh, okay.
Well, I think learning should change behavior, but behavior doesn't mean necessarily active stuff. It can also be in terms of how we perceive things.
But does that mean that if my life has not changed, that I've learned, is that what
you're saying? Well, no. Well, in some ways, yes. I would say that's true in some ways. But the learning can be cognition, which will affect how I perceive things. And if I perceive things differently, I will act differently based on what I perceive. So there's a connection between both. But I always say true learning changes behavior. So I'm always moving in that direction if I can. That's partially my exhortation gift. I want people to use and do things along the way. Mm-hmm. You got a good answer on that?
Well, I just would add that learning also would affect the way you think. And so I would say that learning has taken place when one has, it is affecting both who I am, what I do, and how I think in some degree of that area.
Well, that almost sounds like a philosopher. That's pretty good.
I have a personal need in the area of memory, and I've heard advertised by Kevin Trudeau a memorizing or a retaining information course. Are you familiar with that? What do those do for you? Is it just a money-making device, or do you know people who use it to benefit from it?
I'm not familiar with it. My guess is it does make some money. Don't know anything about it. Is Tom here?
Tom.
Eakley?
Eakley, yeah. There he is in the back.
You know anything about that?
Well, I think we're just about out of time.
Sorry, Nate, we don't know that one.
So we'll pick up on leading, but a whole different section, I think, looking forward to this tomorrow. What's that?
On learning.
I mean learning, yes, right. Learning, thank you.